Is that word?
Innovative.
Innovative?
Innovative. Whatever. You can say it both ways.
I think it's indicates.
Indicative? Is that the word you were looking
that
for?
That is a good word, Kristen Bright.
A friend wouldn't make fun of somebody like for knowing a word. See, this is what I'm talking about, people. Kristen Bright does not believe in friendship.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
All right. Kind of a different topic than normal for this morning, but how much did your car cost you? And I don't even know. I mean, the truth is, I'm thinking back on my car right now, and I know what my monthly payments are, but I actually, looking back at it,
don't remember.
Off the top of my head, don't remember. Because it was like, all right, well, what am I going to know? If I'm leasing, how much am I going to owe for how many months? Because you're not paying the full cost of the car.
Right.
But I'm curious as to what your current car cost you, because as of right now, there is only a single model that costs less than $20,000.
That's unreal.
Isn't that wild?
Yes.
There's only one new car left under $20,000. It's a Mitsubishi Mirage.
Does it have wheels?
It does have wheels.
Okay, good.
But I'm curious, just for context of how much more expensive things are, just in general, what did you pay for your car? 844-967-2789. And I guess also then, does this make you want to hold on to that car for as long as possible?
Drive it until the doors fall off.
Because so a Mitsubishi Mirage was the cheapest new car on the U.S. market last month. You know, and I think it's, you know, if public transit's not your thing, and most of our places, like, it's not an option.
Right.
Like, we don't have, unless you live, like, the East Coast is pretty good, but most of the state, most of the country, to be able to get around the way you need to get around either takes a lot of time, if you're going to take public transit.
For sure.
Or is actually just not possible. And so for the most part, we've built a lot of our state, cities, country in as a way that you need to have a car one way or another. So, but as of, so Cox Automotive found that Mitsubishi Mirage was the only new model going for less than $20,000 last month. And its average selling price is $19,205. But the middle of the road new car cost, as of July 2023, middle of the road, what do you think it was, Jane?
Oh, I'm afraid. 32.
Higher.
36.
48.
Is the middle of the road?
It's the middle of the road. It up 30% since 2019.
Wow.
Yeah. And used cars are no better. The average July price for a used car was $27,000. Which is also a hike from a 30% hike from 2019. And, you know, this is a strain on the family budget. Like, you think about, I was looking this up this morning as far as what the suggested budget breakdown is for your, you know, your monthly take home pay is this, and 30% should go to housing, and 10 to 15% should go to transit. And transit is not only your car payment, it's also gas.
And what about maintenance?
And maintenance, yeah. And if you get in an accident. But it takes over 42 weeks of median household income to cover the average car cost, the average cost of a new car. And on the top high of high prices, high interest loans are also now a burden, because a record 17.1% of new car owners had a monthly payment above $1,000 a month.
I can't even imagine.
How much you're supposed to be spending. Like, I was doing the math this morning, and if the median income in Wisconsin is around $67,000, at least according to this source, sometimes I see different ones, but it's always somewhere between like $50,000 and $70,000. So that means your take-home pay is a little more than $4,000 a month. which means that's what you should be spending on, like, your rent or mortgage is $1,000 a month. Not a car.
Right.
So I'm just curious, how much did you spend on your car? Not a good thing or a bad thing, but just as you're putting this in context of how much did you spend on your car now? And even more, how much did you spend on your first car, if you remember that? 844-967-2789.
Tom from West Dallas. Good morning, Tom. What did you shell out for your wheels?
Well, actually, I've never bought new. I never saw the point in it. So basically, my last vehicle, I traded in two pickup trucks for one pickup truck plus $5,000. That pickup truck I'm still driving. It's an 01. I had a problem with it. I took it into the dealer to fix, which I knew was a dumb thing, but I did it anyways. And I, for giggles, went in to talk to a salesman. I spec'd out my 2001 Dodge Ram with a diesel engine for a brand new one. Now, Grant, this is 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay.
My truck, brand new, 4 or 5 years ago, with all the bells and whistles that mine had, $63,000.
For all the bells and whistles.
And for everyone that my truck that I am currently driving has.
Oh, but just new.
But brand new.
Okay.
Also, I have been looking for another truck, but I want what I want is a diesel because I like my diesel. I pull a big trailer. I found a 98 Dodge Ram pickup truck, just like mine, but a few years older, used for
$15,000. Wow.
Granted, it looked like new, but it's used. It's a 22, or that was a 24-year-old truck.
Oh, and for a 24-year-old truck, yeah.
For a used truck, and I've seen them go anywhere between like $8,000 to $15,000 for a 20-some-year-old truck.
Yeah. Wow.
That to me is insane also.
Well, it's also, like, Jane, you said how much on your first car?
My first car was $8,000.
Which, again, we'll adjust for inflation. I'll get the inflation calculator up. But, like, do you think you could even find a car for less than $10,000 right now?
Not if you want wheels.
Yeah.
For used, you can, but it's you got to look and see what you're buying.
Yes.
You know,
likelihood of lemon high.
Well, yeah, you're going to end up you're going to end up throwing so much money into maintenance or getting it up to speed. Is that worth it then?
Right. Right. Now I've also bought an 01 VW Beetle. I'll never buy a VW again. I loved my Beetle, but just the things you had to do, you had to have special tools for it. I thought that was ridiculous. That I bought knowing that the transmission was not good on it. And
wait, what's wrong with the VW? Because I'm thinking about buying the VW Tiguan I drive now and buying my lease out. Should I not do that?
Well, I no.
Oh. No,
Tom says no.
There's even a guy on YouTube, Scotty Kilmer, who he just slams VWs, talking about like windshield wipers. There's a computer that runs the windshield wipers. There's no need for that. And if your windshield wipers go bad, well, now you're spending a few $1,000 just because the computer went bad. But mine, granted, that was an 01. I needed I like to work on my vehicles. And I needed special tools to work on it for no reason.
All right.
I could just tell you, too, that it had the injection pump had plates on it, and one of those plates was leaking. Well, it had three normal bolts, and it had one special bolt that I had to buy a tool specifically for that. I'm like, why couldn't you just put four normal bolts? VWs used to be the people's car. They were simple to work on. Now, no. No,
well, I don't think I'm trying to work on my car anytime soon, but I will take that into consideration for what I do with my purchase. But thanks so much for the call, Tom.
Thanks a lot, Tom. 844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY. Scott from Chicago. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning. Yeah, my first car was, I believe, about 4,000, needed about 1,000 repairs. Did not last very long. Second car, about 4,500, needed about 2,000 repairs, but that was also hybrid. And then my current car, I actually bought from a friend for about 5,000, which was about 3,000 under market value. And I mean, it's going great.
All right.
But also, my friend repaired his own car and really kept it up and all that. So, yeah, I mean, anything under about 7 or 8, you're going to be putting in a few thousand in repairs.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's, you're going to pay for it. I mean, that's like one way or another, you're probably going to pay over 10 grand, whether it's the cost of the car. But yeah, I mean, to even think that like used cars that are in good condition are
few and far between.
Yeah, totally.
Few and far between.
Thanks for the call, Scott.
844-967-2789. Texter from the 262. Seems like in the near future, the average American is going to have to pick between reliable transportation or owning a home.
I mean, maybe. Like, it's
so expensive.
It's so expensive of how you do both, or like, and you, but it, like I said, you come back to a place where like you need a car. In most places, you need a car.
844-967-2789. Dave from Mequon. Good morning, Dave. We got about 2 minutes.
All right. Good morning. Well, my first car, I spent $6,000, and it worked very well. I was happy about it. I actually, fortunately, have a friend of mine who is in the used car business. And so I always am able to get a very nice used car. I never, other than one time in my life, I've never purchased new. I purchased generally used. And I actually bought a few cars during COVID when Hertz was doing the bankruptcy, and up picking up a couple cars there. They were just giving them away with almost no miles because nobody was driving them. And so I got lucky in that sense. But I would recommend, this is what I would recommend. I mean, some people, you know, obviously dealers are going to always charge more than a private owner would.
Yeah.
And I always strongly recommend trying to find a private owner just because the price that they're going to be asking is automatically going to be lower.
Yep.
And you probably will have a little bit of negotiating power in addition to that. And as long as the car's title's clean and you can get a Carfax, which is easy enough.
That's great advice, you know, Dave. We got to go to a break, so I got to cut you off. Yep. But thanks for always, as always, for your call. We're going to come back with more of your calls and texts. 844-967-2789. How much did your car cost? Your current car, your first car? Because right now, you can't buy a new car for less than $20,000. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. And we are talking about how much does your car cost you? Your current car, or maybe even your first car, although we have to adjust for inflation potentially, depending on if you're my age or Jane's age.
There's a big difference there.
But, and I'm asking this because I saw a headline this morning that there is only one new car left under $20,000, and it's a Mitsubishi Mirage that the average selling price is around $9,200.
$19,200.
And, you know, some of this is to do with the fact that America loves big ass cars.
and even bigger trucks.
And you're about to go to Europe. And the land of tiny cars.
Yes.
And I always think about that the handful of times I've been lucky enough to go to Europe is just how little their cars are, which makes sense because there's so many of their cities are more compact. And so being able to actually get into parking spaces and getting around and the streets are more narrow. But America has an obsession with supersized cars. And so the fact is, with that supply and demand, car makers have ditched affordable compact vehicles. And you add on top of that pandemic-related supply chain snags, and you just have kind of created a situation where cars are really expensive.
844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY. Rick from Wisconsin Rapids. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning. I appreciate the conversation that you're all having, and I just wanted to weigh in on it.
Absolutely.
Okay. What, So the first car that I bought was a Plymouth Duster, and I paid $700. And the body was pretty far along in its decrease, but that car ran forever. It was a good engine.
Yep.
It was a good deal. The car I have now is a Chevy Cobalt. I paid $3,000. I was out of budget and I wanted to pay cash. I've had it for more than 2 years. It's a good runner. There's some other features that I'm not thrilled about. No air conditioning.
Oh boy.
And it would cost me a lot. But I'm very satisfied that for $3,000, and it's been running for more than 2 years.
All right.
That I got a good deal. But can I mention one more thing with the conversation?
Sure.
Or not. Well, I just want to tell you about an experiment I did. We talk about the cost and how can people afford to have a decent car and to have a place to live and all that. I did an experiment when my last car went out. It was a Saturn, and the transmission went out, and it was already near 200,000 miles, and I said, I'm not going to fix it. And instead of buying another car, I went on bicycle for 5 years from the time I was age 59 to 64, even in the winter.
Wow.
Winter in Wisconsin Rapids, and you were on a bicycle?
I was the nut that people looked at when it was 28, 25 below the wind chill and said, what is that guy doing?
I'm going to ask my parents. I'm going to say, did you see a guy riding a bike in Wisconsin Rapids? That was Rick.
And Rick, unfortunately, your line is not very good. You're kind of popping in and out a little bit. So thank you so very much for calling. Really, really appreciate it. 844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY. Price from Texas. Good morning, Price.
Hey, I know you got people waiting. I'll keep her under 60 seconds. But our hybrid was about 24. That was a 2017 that we got new, but it was like the last one. We got it like the year after. They're trying to get rid of it. Our SUV was an older one, 2011, so that was about 12. And we had payments on that for a long time. We finally got them paid off. One thing, just tell everybody. They're going to be set. And if you got a decent car, they're going to be sending you, hey, you want to trade in your car?
Yeah.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Because because used cars are so expensive now, they're just going to flip those cars and make money. It's better to keep that car right now.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Price.
Oh, no, I just wanted to say this, but also with how expensive cars are and how expensive gas is and repairs and everything. It's a public policy failure for public transportation. Public transportation down here in Texas sucks. It's awful. Yeah. I miss Chicago and I miss Milwaukee, even with the buses. The buses were way better. And also, like, work from home, the concessions have to be made because if people can't afford, if people have the internet at home and they can work at home, they should be able to because it's so expensive to commute.
Yeah.
And that's about it, man. Public transportation would help out a lot, but let's go. And that's it for me. Have a great day.
Thanks so much, Price.
Thanks a lot,
we
Price.
Appreciate it as always. And that's the situation I found myself in. So my lease is up in November. And besides starting this job, so it's been a little over a year now that I've been mostly commuting to Waukesha, except some days doing the show from home. But for the most part, I'm here. And but prior to that, I mean, it was the pandemic. And so I wasn't really driving a lot at all. And even when I got the car originally in LA for the first, I mean, we only had it for about 6 months before the pandemic started. So there's only like 35,000 miles on it.
Oh, wow.
So Mike, I got to the dealership and they were pushing me hard.
I bet.
To trade it in, upgrade my lease to a newer car. And like they would, you know, all the kind of little dings and stuff that they would just take care of.
Sure.
And I'm not a car person. So I'm like, okay, what? And I'm way too trusting. So I'm just going to like, okay, whatever. Like, sure.
Sounds good.
I'll bring the, but of course I've now, this is like the gendered part of my marriage. There's not a lot of it, but sometimes it comes up. And when it comes to like negotiating car stuff, definitely one of them. So Mike looked at everything. He goes, no, they're just trying to get you. They want your car.
Yes.
They want your car so they can flip it.
And make
a ton of money on
exactly.
it. He's like, you've basically a new car. And I think we figured it out, like, my last, I'd owe like $11,000 or something on it as far as where the lease was and versus now. He's like, you're not trading it in. You're going to buy this car. And so it's like, okay,
all
I don't
right
care.
Then.
Like, this is fine. As long as I get new snow tires so the baby's safe, like, I'm fine, whatever. But that is exactly what Price said as far as, and the pressure was hard.
For sure.
These sales guys, man.
One last text from the 262. I drive a Honda Insight. Think Toyota Prius size. My friends in England would call that their big car.
Yeah, see? All right, well, when we come back, it is Tuesday at 10:30, so let's recombobulate with the one and only Dan Schaefer, because we have a debate coming up on Wednesday, and he has thoughts. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. Jane Matinair is on the board, and that music means it is time to recombobulate with Dan Schaefer. Now, Jane, you took issue with the fact that he now has special music also on Town Call on Wednesdays.
I feel that the bumper music gauntlet has been thrown by Luke Mathers and William Walters on Town Call.
Because what did they
Jane,
make?
I love how competitive you are with this. I'm really enjoying it. and I really enjoy the walk-up music as well. So, you know, I'm just really enjoying this all the way around.
Because what did they play for you?
They cut up a couple different things together. It's like a Twilight Zone type of intro that involves Bobby Portis quotes. So I really enjoy that as well.
It's a little kookier.
Okay, I feel way secure now.
Yes. I will say there's something very menacing, and like it's like the intro to like you're a character in a musical theater, like Broadway show that he's like coming on stage with our music.
I feel like I'm really making an entrance with it.
It's dramatic. It's a big entrance.
All right. Well, fresh off his vacation, you look refreshed and rested.
Thank you.
I don't know, traveling with a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old, how rested you feel, but you were on vacation, so we can talk about that a little bit later.
Sure, yeah. Vacation with young children is more of an adventure than any kind of relaxation, if I'm trying to put it as kindly as I can.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it. But let's just cut to the chase. As far as the biggest news in Wisconsin, I would say this week, is the debate that is happening in Milwaukee tomorrow of Wisconsin being on the national stage, as we typically are every 4 years, but this year even more so because of the RNC coming here, because of the first debate being here. We are going to be on site in the Deer District doing shows all day from Whitetail right on 3rd Street or MLK in downtown Milwaukee across from the Fiserv. Where are you going to spend tomorrow?
Well, I did get credentials to
Look
cover the debate.
I'm going
to be down there as well. Yeah.
You're welcome to stop by and say hi to us. But you're going to be in there.
I'm going to be in there. I'm going to be covering the debate. I'm going to be trying to talk to some folks. Just, you know, Milwaukee is in the national spotlight.
Yeah.
Milwaukee is a city that is often very thirsty to have that national spotlight. And so I'm very interested to see how, you know, the whole national media Republican campaign apparatus circus reacts to Milwaukee. I'm interested to see how Milwaukee reacts to the national media Republican primary circus. I think the whole thing is just going to be absolutely fascinating.
Yeah. What do you have predictions on how you think that dynamic will go?
You know, I guess there's a couple different pieces of it. One is just like what's happening on the stage. And so I'm kind of interested to see, you know, both in terms of just the typical political pandering, but also just like the type of commentary you might see from candidates about Milwaukee. You know, I think many people are seeing this as a dress rehearsal, so to speak, for the RNC next year. And Republicans in Wisconsin often do not have very nice things to say about Milwaukee.
It's true.
Republicans nationally have questioned the legitimacy of our votes in Milwaukee over and over and over and over and over again. So I'm interested to see if that type of thing will make it you know, on the debate stage, or if you will see something else, if you see the type of, you know, political pandering to the local audience, the obvious importance of the swing state, this wonderful state, this beautiful this, blah, 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 all the types of things. So I'm interested to see how Milwaukee enters the conversation on the debate stage. And in, I don't know, what are you expecting, I guess?
I don't know. That? You know, we're obviously doing, like I said, we're doing shows tomorrow. So I'm doing a lot of my prep to tonight. And it's such a, you know, I'm trying to think, because of the last time there was a competitive, obviously, Republican primary was 2016, which for me, if I'm being totally honest, was before I got kind of like politically activated. Like I was still working in tech and kind of, you know, read the news, but was not like following the news, and certainly that primary with bated breath as far as like it being my job, let alone something that was, you know, I kind of just assumed at that point, like, you know, especially once Donald Trump in 2016 got the nomination, I was more in the camp of being like, this is a joke, right? You know, of like the Don Oliver Trump thing. And so like, I would say this time around, paying attention to Republican politics as much as I have for the last couple of years, is still like a new experience of going through the actual presidential nomination thing for me. And so I'm excited to see it. I'm looking forward, I guess. Well, I think the main thing I'm really looking forward to is what's going to get higher ratings, Trump and Tucker or the actual debate. And I think honestly, like, I think that's going to be telling.
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting. And I want to pull a tweet from a national journalist that I think really speaks to how weird the circumstances surrounding the debate are with Trump and all that. So John Dickerson from CBS tweeted yesterday, "You must sign a loyalty pledge to enter the debate that promises you will support the party nominee, even if that ends up being the person who skips the debate, in part because they would never make a blanket promise to support the eventual nominee." I think you had the circumstances surrounding this debate, because of all of those factors, it's just so undeniably weird. Like, of course, we're having the start of this campaign cycle, and it's all the pageantry and then the spotlight and all that. But it's just so weird. Like, yeah. Trump is lapping the field, and he's not going to be there. And even if he were to face a real challenge, he's not going to concede. And you know, it's just the undeniable weirdness surrounding this whole primary and everything happening with Donald Trump. I guess perhaps we should be used to this strangeness by now, after 8 years of the Trump circus. But it's still a new weird experience, even now.
It absolutely is. And we're recombobulating with Dan Schaefer, if you're just joining us. And I just can't get over the conundrum the Republican Party is in, and that he puts them in that they are walking this line of their bottom line is they want a Republican in the White House. Mm-hmm. And the bets they have to make of how they get there, and there is no clear option at all.
Well, okay, so here's another factor that I think is really interesting. So a lot of people who are not Trump supporters within the Republican Party are saying that he is not their best chance to beat Joe Biden, mm-hmm. right? So that's a lot of their argument for just kind of the electability factor. Oh, maybe Ron DeSantis polls better. Maybe Tim Scott polls better. You can pick any candidate throughout the field. But what I'm suggesting here is he is probably their best chance to win, because if he is not the nominee, he's taken the GOP down with him.
Well, and that's right? What I mean. Like, that's the thing. It's like, there's no way, if as long as he's not in jail or like actually has been convicted of any of his 91 counts that he has at this point, like, there's no reason for any of us to think that if he didn't get the nomination, which at this point looks like unlikely, that he wouldn't still run as an independent.
Right. Yeah, I wrote about this in a piece a couple weeks ago at the Recombobulation area, but I think one of the factors looming over this whole primary is the fact that Trump isn't going to concede, even if he were to lose. So we're kind of going through the motions, it feels like. I know Trump tweeted or Truth Socialed a couple weeks ago, or X'd. I don't know where
he
is. But he said, like, this debate is kind of the find out to see who's going to be his VP, and, it, you know,
Which is not untrue. I mean, that's a kind of a good transition to talk about, like, all right, so who's going to show up and how are they going to show up at the out of the eight nominees and the candidates who are going to be there? Like, who's going to go hard at Trump? We already know Chris Christie is absolutely going to. It seems like Mike Pence is getting more of a backbone, like, since some of the indictments have come down. Asa Hutchardson. But, like, it seems like Vivek and Nikki Haley are just auditioning to be to get a cabinet position. And so, like, who's going to say, because, like, you have to admit, you have to imagine that they're going to ask about, was the election stolen? So what is everyone's answer going to be there? Questions about Trump's indictment, what are our answers going to be there? And, like, so I think, exactly, like you said, like, who's auditioning and who's actually running for president?
Right, right. Yeah, or who's just, you know, I think the Chris Christie's of the world, and, you know, you talked about Asa Hutchinson and Mike Pence, that, like, will they maybe will go after, but they're, you know, not, they're very far down in the polls. So it's just like, I think typically in a debate like this, you would see a lot of, you know, the pressure on the front runner with, you know, kind of the rest of the field looking to overtake them. Now, there's a different dynamic here because of Trump. You can't alienate the Trump base, but you also can't. You know, it's a difficult line to walk for a lot of these candidates. You think of somebody like, you know, I think there's a lot of pressure on Ron DeSantis with this debate. Like, is he really going to go at Trump? Is he going to use this national spotlight to try to reverse the nosedive that he has been in for the past few months in his, you know, and he's, even though he has been in a nosedive in the poll for the past 2 months, he's still way ahead of the rest of the field.
Which is true. But is it also just because he has better name recognition? Do you think that has something to do with it? Because he's been talked about a lot for in the national news for like a couple years.
But like, you know, Mike Pence has good name recognition. Yeah. Nikki Haley has good name recognition. Chris Christie, you know, I just think he's basically. But I think the thing with DeSantis is he's kind of been running for the last couple of years. You know, his reelection campaign for the gubernatorial race in Florida seemed like would lead right into his presidential campaign.
So here's my question. How much do you think his debate approach is now going to still stick to what got leaked? Or do you think they have a new approach? Are they going to screw everyone up because everyone's like, he's going to go after Vivek because that was what the leak said? Or is
I missed this.
You were on vacation.
Yeah, I was on vacation.
His political consultants on their website, on Axiom.com, posted his debate prep last week.
Whoops.
What?
You really checked out. Good for you.
I was trying to be as offline as possible last week. Yeah.
So last week, the debate strategy memo was posted to their website for everyone to see. And I think they took it down, but it was up long enough for people to, like, most shows like this. Well, we didn't talk about it, but certainly other civic media shows talked about it. And so it was basically, don't go after Trump.
Defend him.
Defend Trump. Go after Vivek. What else was in there? But it was like, what? Who did you hire? Who did you hire to run your campaign that this is the kind of mistake that they make? So my question is, now that everyone knows what his, because even then everyone, you know, tore it apart as far as what the strategy, not only that it was posted, but that what the actual strategy. That, like, this, the strategy didn't seem like, if you really are trying to win this thing, is this is what you're going to do? And so my question now is, do they stick with it or do they change course?
Man, that is amazing. That campaign, history is going to really study this DeSantis campaign for how to just fumble a lead, fumble an opportunity. My goodness, this has been the most disastrous campaign that I can remember. It reminds me a lot of surrounding himself with just the most far-right, super online people, and I think we saw a preview of that in Wisconsin last year with their Clayfish campaign, where she surrounded herself with a lot of, like, super online ultra right wing people who eventually kind of tanked a candidacy that seemed pretty formidable on its face.
See, and my big question is, how long will it take Ron DeSantis to freeze into that awkward smile? It's just so unnerving because it's so unnatural. It's just
he's like the anti-Obama. He can't connect with anyone.
There's no warmth. There's no. It's remarkable.
Yeah. All right. Well, we still got another segment to recombobulate with Dan Schaefer. Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about the debate. We talk a little bit about your vacation. Maybe talk about the tension in the Supreme Court. Maybe all of it. But we will talk about all of that and more. If you have any questions for Dan, feel free to text them in 844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY. We'll be right back. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. And we are recombobulating with Dan Schaefer, as we always do, at 10:30, from 10:30 to 11 on Tuesdays. So one of the things you said in the last segment, Dan, about as we were talking about DeSantis' campaign and the eight candidates who are going to be at the debate tomorrow, is, I think, a very real divide for both parties, which is the very... listening, it's doing social listening, you know, to the very online crowd of, and I would put you and I in there. I don't know, Jane, would you put yourself in being very online?
I'm pretty online.
You're pretty online. Yeah. I mean, you have to read a lot of stuff for this show and stuff.
For sure.
And that meaning pays hyper attention to the news, gets their news from social media, Twitter, TikTok, all those things, engages with it. Engages in the different conversations and, like, I think is more polarized than the not online contingent of people who are just living their lives, lower news consumption folks. I would say probably people who, when it comes to the issues that they care about, are less fringe. And this is on both sides. And so I think, like, how do you as a journalist keep those straight of, like, what's actually going on?
That's a good question. I try to also, in addition to just being, you know, terminally online, as I certainly am, like to have a lot of conversations off the record with people who are not terminally online. So I think that's part of it. But I also like to, you know, just try to test the waters of seeing what types of stories truly resonate. And if people, you know, don't necessarily understand this, like, I don't know, strange online debate happening around schools or, you know, CRT or drag queens or whatever it is. I think there are a lot of issues that are just soak up a lot of the attention of not just, like, people who are online, but people who are, like, very into cable news or just very into... you know, very into the news cycle generally. And I think it's, I think sometimes I'll notice, like, when certain friends who are not particularly political will jump in on an issue on Facebook or something like that. I'll be like, oh, this one broke through. That's interesting. You know, or if I see something that, people will be talking about and I'm just like, oh, okay, this is actually breaking through and not just something that people are battering around online, you know?
And it's because I think it's interesting as far, because I think about that a fair amount of who are you making this for? Like when I'm making a video or something like that, like, are you making it for the people who probably already know about this topic and who are likely to share it because it's something that they already agree with or they already want more people to know it, about it? Or are you making it for, like, the people who have not heard about this at all? And so that's from, like, a content creation, news coverage story or side of it. But, like, that's also different than when you're trying to make, like, policy decisions and what your platform is and what you're running on and, like, who... Because it's not that... You can't say, like, the real people who are not terminally online, because obviously the people who are terminally online are real people. But it's, like... Just because they're louder, are there actually more of them?
I don't know, but I think I'm thinking about this in the terms of the campaign decisions too. Yeah. I think, you know, the Ron DeSantis campaign, I think a lot of people have criticized it for being too online. And I think if you look at Joe Biden's campaign in 2020, like, I think he very pointedly tried to ignore his campaign tried to ignore a lot of the online noise, a lot of the Twitter conversation. And I think that was ultimately to their benefit, because I think it would cut through a lot of the circular debates that would be happening and kind of focus more on the bigger picture. And I think that's what you can ultimately get. But I think, you know, circling back to the conversation we started here, which just the debate, I think the debate is something that can kind of break through the super online conversations that we've been having about this. And I think that's what, you know, all of the non-Trump campaigns have to be viewing this debate as an opportunity to do, is to get out of the both the terminally online spaces and the, you know, diners and county fair spaces as well, is to try to reach that mass audience and really try to make a difference in the trajectory of their campaign. And I think that's what, thinking back to, you know, 4 years ago when it was the Democratic field, I think one of the reasons that Joe Biden ultimately won the nomination is because he didn't get bogged down in the weirdness of that. I think campaigns like Elizabeth Warren's, who I was really interested in see where her campaign would go at the time, I think her campaign got, you know, the attention of kind of like the Democratic staffer.
the young progressive world. Who loved her, that's super online, like is very online. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the same thing is happening with the DeSantis campaign. And I think, you know, I think Trump, by not being part of this, is going to kind of miss a little bit of that. But I think also, like, he's just such a force of Trump as a entity that it almost doesn't matter. So, so I don't know.
Well, I'll be interested to see in all the conversations you have, since you did get credentials to go to the debate tomorrow, when you report back on the kind of people who attended the debate, because it's not open to the public. Like, you had to get, you know,
you get invited. I don't know if it was
invited or exactly, but it's not like you can just show up. Right. Like, and like, I've talked to some people who are going who, like, you have to be there at this time. And like, I think it's a process. And so it'll be interesting.
Yeah, it's not a Bucks game. You can't just buy a ticket and go. Yeah.
But I think it'll be interesting for people, for like you and other people who are going, to report back of like, is it a bunch of political insiders? Is it just people from the Republican Party in Wisconsin in general? But yeah, that's certainly something I am looking forward to. Are you going to stop by Whitetail so we can see you tomorrow?
Absolutely.
All right, good. Well, last thing, how was it to step in all three of the Great Lakes? Was it all in one day that you did that?
Yeah, it was in one day. That was so I went on a family road trip this last week. Wanted to get one in before school started. And on the final day of the road trip, we were going to be driving. So we went to Mackinac Island, and then we were going to be driving back through the UP. And as part of that, I had this like dad goal of wanting to stand in three Great Lakes in one day.
You got to have goals.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, I shout out to my wife for indulging this admittedly very stupid and somewhat time consuming goal.
How much time did it add to the trip to be able to do this?
I think it only ultimately added about an hour for the day's trip, but it's an extra hour with a 2 and 6 year old in the car is not nothing. So,
which lake was the coldest?
I think Superior probably, but Superior was beautiful. I had never been to Lake Superior before, so I was actually very excited to do that. But Mackinac Island with Lake Huron, and then drove up to Lake Superior, ended the day in Lake Michigan. So,
Good job, Dad. We're very proud of you.
Telling that story too long.
All right. Well, we'll see you tomorrow, hopefully at Whitetail, but we'll see you back on the show next Tuesday, where we will recombobulate again with Mr. Dan Schaefer. Bye, buddy.